fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Hi, well, it's Friday, September 20th already, although it feels like it might be August. And in fact, the weather is tonight a low of only about 56 degrees, mostly clear. Tomorrow, sunny. So we're going to have a sunny Saturday, high of about 84 degrees. And tomorrow night, mostly clear, then some patchy fog, not that cold, only about 57 degrees. And on Sunday, you know, watch if you're going out early because there should be still some patchy fog. And then sunny, so we'll have a sunny Sunday, about 86 degrees. Monday, there is about a 30% chance of showers, so lots of clouds. Now, Monday, it's again, every day, the next 3 days, it's going to be in the 80s. And by Monday night, again, there's a 30% chance of showers and a low of about 59 degrees. So should have a great weekend. Just be careful with that fog because the deer get confused, we get confused, and that's an easy way because they're not watching. Ordinarily, most of the deer in this area actually watch. Now, you don't think so if you've had deer accidents, but they really do. However, if it's raining hard or really foggy, they have difficulty. So I'm Pat Smits. The show is It's the Law, and I'll be back after just one quick commercial. And I think today what we're going to talk is about the court system and the appellate division. I think people get very confused about the court systems here in New Jersey. So be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Okay, we're back. Those of you who know me know I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. Actually, I practice pretty much all over the state. My work is limited to mainly family matters, wide spectrum of family matters, although everybody thinks I'm a divorce attorney. I certainly do a lot of other things, and one of the areas that I've been doing some more work recently is guardianship, and our population is getting older, and so there are more family concerns with some of our elderly. But what I wanted to do today is talk about a little bit about the appellate division, because people get very confused in New Jersey about our court system. Most people, if they've been to court at all, probably have been to municipal court, maybe a speeding ticket, so tickets, it could be some other minor matter. And that's what's handled by municipal courts. And we have lots of municipalities and lots of municipal courts. Now, the judges who sit in municipal court in New Jersey, they are lawyers. Most of them have private law practices, or perhaps work for, you know, the state or some other entity, although I'm not so sure that there are any who work for the state now. But in any event, they usually have private practices, and they do this part-time. Same thing with the lawyers who are the municipal prosecutors. That is probably just one of the things that they do. Some of the prosecutors you'll see sit in more than one municipal court. Same thing with the judges. So what I wanted to do today, however, is talk about the Superior Court. Now, Superior Court is state of New Jersey. They, of course, have what we call different vicinages. And in this area in Hunterdon County. It's Somerset County, Hunterdon County, and Warren County. We're one vicinage. Mercer County, for example, would just have one because it's a larger county. If you talk to me and scratch the surface, I believe that Somerset should be a separate, and Somerset County should be a separate court, and it would make more sense to have Warren County and Hunterdon County in one vicinage. But that's another story. So what happens in New Jersey? Unlike some other states, in New Jersey, there is a right to appeal from a final judgment in either the civil part, the family part, even landlord-tenant, in any one of the courts here, there is a right to appeal. Now, many of the appeals from a municipal court would come to the Superior Court, but what I wanted to focus on is the appellate division. New Jersey is well-recognized around the country for having what most people would say is a hot court, and the judges is very interesting because what happens from any final judgment, one party or the other can take an appeal. So some statistics which in some ways are pretty amazing. During the 2018 court year, that's from September 1st of 2018 through August 31st of 2019, so we're just the year that finished, in New Jersey, there were 5,853 appeals filed. Now, there were 6,184 appeals decided, so obviously some of these were filed last year, or maybe even the year before. There were also 9,615 motions heard by the appellate judges. What is truly amazing is that the written opinions per judge are about 130 a year. So they write 130 opinions a year. Now, we have both, now this is per judge. So some of the opinions are published and others are not. Now, what does that mean? Well, an opinion that is published can be used, it's precedent, so that as attorneys, we read the opinions, especially the published opinions, because it is very important for us to know what's going on, both the appellate division and, of course, the Supreme Court. Now, the only right of appeal from the appellate division is if there is a dissent. In other words, you can't appeal to the Supreme Court unless there is a dissent by the appellate division. And by that, I mean appeal of right. There is certainly what we can do is file petitions for certification, and then the Supreme Court decides whether or not they're going to take that case. But I think it's important right now is to talk about the appeals and obviously what is happening when there's appeal. How do they decide whether or not a case is going to be published? And as I said, a case is precedential if it's published. A non-published case, as an attorney, we really can't even cite those cases to another court. Although it's done, we are supposed to tell the court about every other non-published case. And, of course, that's very difficult. You might see something in an unpublished case that you love, but, you know, who's going to have the time to find every other case that might deal with that issue? So I have to tell you, the appellate division here in New Jersey is very impressive. So what we do is we also we talk about divisions. So there's the trial division, there's the appellate division, and then, of course, there's the Supreme Court. So publication, you may or may not care as a litigant whether your case is published. Your attorney might. The criteria for publication is it has to be a three-judge panel. Well, so what does that mean? Well, there are two-judge panels and three-judge panels, and the court determines whether or not there are going to be two appellate judges that sit to hear the case or three appellate judges. So a lot of times attorneys will say, oh, boy, if we have a two-judge case, they're just going to affirm what the trial judge said. So attorneys, you know, are really looking to see whether the panel assigned is going to be two judges or three judges. And sometimes, honestly, you really don't know. There will be times where two judges will actually hear oral argument, and then the court will ask if they can have a third judge also dealing with it. However, so how many judges are there? Well, in New Jersey, there are what we call eight parts and 33 judges. So there are four judges in each part of the, so they break down in fours, and then one has five judges on it. So how are the judges selected? Well, I don't know of any judge, and I've been practicing for 41 years, I really don't recall any judge that was appointed directly to the appellate division. The judges are appointed to the trial court, and then at some point some go up to the appellate division. Now, frankly, I wouldn't think that this was a promotion because of the workload. And I'm not saying that trial judges don't have a heavy workload. They do. Usually a judge would not go up to the appellate division. I don't know if there's any hard and fast rule, but I really don't know of judges who've been elevated to the appellate division before they have tenure. So the judges have to sit in New Jersey. They sit for 7 years, then they get tenure. If they get tenure, then they have what we call a lifetime appointment, but lifetime means age 70. So all of the judges in New Jersey are required to retire at age 70. Now, that doesn't mean that they might not be on recall, which means that a judge who's over 70, who's had to retire, can be called back. And in fact, here in Hunterdon County, Judge Rubin, who was actually the prosecutor, then he was a trial court judge for many years. Now he's on recall, and he sits mainly handling the estate work and that type of thing. So although there are times where he'll do a family matter, do a trial. So we're talking about the number of judges. So, as I said, there are eight parts, 33 judges. There's a 39-week term. It runs from September to June. And then in the summer, there's 2 weeks. Each judge sits for two weeks. The judges, each of them have they have two law clerks. And we also have a central research in Trenton. And there are full-time lawyers that also work on cases. When I say work on cases, they do the initial review of the appeal and the briefs that are filed, and there's a scheduling order. So when an appeal is filed, there is a scheduling order, and of course the either the judge's law clerks, or most often, in my experience recently, there has been an attorney at the appellate division who does the initial review, and they write a memorandum, and ultimately it goes to the judge. But these judges really know the cases. They really have read everything, and they talk informally. so that they will talk with whoever else is on the panel who plans on sitting on the case. They go back and forth with memos. I mean, they really know the case. And one of the things that is, I shouldn't say interesting, but I've been at oral argument because you can request oral argument, and if you request oral argument, it will be granted. But I've seen attorneys who, you know, obviously we file the briefs months and sometimes years before oral argument. So what happens is the judges who recently have been looking at all of this, you have to be very careful that they don't know more about your case than you know. And I really mean that. And you'll see if somebody can't answer questions, because that's what happened. You appear for oral argument, and it's a two-judge panel, three-judge panel. They very often will start peppering you with questions. So you have to be able to not only know your case, preferably also know the judge, and know how this particular judge has decided other matters that are similar to your case, if that's possible. And some of them have been sitting a long time, and you'll know that. Others are what we call newbies. They've been on the trial court, and now they're assigned to the appellate division, or perhaps just temporarily assigned to the appellate division, which means they've been sitting as a trial judge. They're temporarily assigned to the appellate division, frankly, to see if they like that work and if they're good at it. Because for most of us who are litigators, advocates, frankly, I never wanted to be a judge ever. I clerked for a judge, so I saw what that life was like. But certainly a trial judge has to make decisions on all kinds of things, rarely will write any kind of an opinion that is, I shouldn't say significant, because they're all significant, but would be an opinion that would get published. Now, the trial judges can, in fact, submit opinions for publication, and there were some of the judges that I knew many years ago, in fact, there were a lot of published opinions by trial judges. The only one recently who had more than just a couple published was Judge Jones. And unfortunately, Judge Jones decided to go back to private practice. It's not unheard of, by the way. But he was writing a lot of very good opinions with excellent analysis. Now, because he was a trial judge, that meant that nobody had to follow what he was saying. Even if it was published, the other judges in this case, the other judges were at the same level, and so a judge at the same level does not have to accept someone else's viewpoint. Now, the interesting thing is the appellate division is actually the same way. And so sometimes you get contradictory opinions from one panel of the appellate division as compared to another panel of the appellate division. Those cases, as I said, are the types of cases that the Supreme Court tends to take. And they want to get rid of that stalemate. They want to be sure that the decisions are uniform, etc. So I'm going to just take a small break to tell you who sponsors this, and then I'll be back to talk more about the appellate division.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, we're back and we're talking about the appellate division. Okay, what next? Well, as I said, I gave you the number of judges, etc. I told you a little bit about the number of appeals. The breakdown of the 5,853, there were 1,664 civil appeals, 2,513 criminal appeals. Now, a lot of that is, there are people in prison, a lot of jailhouse lawyers, and so they will file appeals not just from their sentence, but from other things that go on within the institution. The family appeals, and although we think there are lots, there were 699 family appeals. There were 845 appeals from state agencies, and then I don't exactly know what they mean by reinstated. There were 132. So perhaps these meant that they were dismissed and then reinstated. The appeals, actually there were 699 family appeals filed, but the courts disposed of 797. So almost 800 family appeals were disposed of last year. And believe me, those of us who do family law, we read them all and see if they might help us in our cases or keep it tucked away in the back of our head for when one of those issues comes up. As I said, a lot of attorneys will say if they have a two-judge panel, they think they're home free if they're the respondent, meaning the person who files the appeal is the appellant, and they're hoping for a three-judge panel because they're hoping that maybe in some way the judge will overturn the decision, the opinion, and give them a second bite of the apple. Well, that may happen, but it's important to find out not only whether it's a two-judge panel or a three-judge panel, but who's sitting on the panel. If there was somebody like Judge Leishaus, who is now retired, but if you had a family matter on appeal before her, win or lose, you knew you were going to get a very well-reasoned decision. And, of course, one of the things that is frustrating in family is very often what will happen is the appellate division will remand the trial to the
back to the judge who was handling it in the trial division, and especially in family, it'll go back to the same judge. If that judge is still sitting as not only as a judge, but in that part. So one of the things that just went to a seminar, and they were emphasizing, know your judge. Absolutely know your judge. And, of course, the second thing is know your case. Know your appeal. Know your the other attorney's appeal, because you, if you don't know what the other attorney is going to argue, you could easily get shut down, because you won't know what to present on your case if, at the end of the case, the other litigant is able to talk to the jury. So that's something that we, you know, you really need to think about. There's a judicial website that you can find a lot of this information on. But I think it's also important for people to realize whether or not it makes sense to file an appeal. So, you know, litigants who don't think they got what they deserved after a trial, very often, especially matrimonial litigants, they'll say, okay, I want to file an appeal. And then you have to talk about it, because what are their chances? What are their chances? I mean, obviously, you want to win at the trial level. I will say, in family matters, in my experience, there's really no winner or loser. It's a matter, now there's some issues that can be won, but it's usually a matter of how are we, or how is the judge going to cut up the pie. And that's why often you'll hear of attorneys who are really trying to push their attorneys to make a settlement. And that's the usual reason, is they know that after, who knows, the trial of could be from hell, and it'll be decided by a judge, and then what are their chances of going up and winning on appeal? In other words, reversing the judge. And there's also, as I said, whether or not it's a two-judge or a three-judge panel, does that make any difference? Well, I do have some statistics that talk about how many were affirmed and how many reversed and how many of the decisions were modified. So the two-judge courts in civil, there were 74% appealed. Now, if it's now that goes down, well, to depending on what kind of case, it can go down to 66%, where the two-judge criminal is 88% are affirmed, and the three-judge criminal, 67% are affirmed. So that, you know, probably makes a difference for some people. I mean, you know, if you show up, and I know the first time I showed up and I was expecting a three-judge panel and it was a two-judge panel, it shook me a bit, because you know that the chances are less. Well, the chances are not great anyway to overturn a decision. Remember, on a two-judge civil case, 74% are affirmed, 16% are reversed, and a final figure on that for how many others is, let's I'm just trying to think of how to present this best. But in any event, with a two-judge civil case, 74% are affirmed, 16% are reversed, and 4% are modified. With a three-judge panel, the affirming it goes from two-judge 76 up to, it's a reverse. The three-judge panel in civil, they affirm it 66% of the time. They also, of course, reverse it. So we have 66 affirmed, 20 reversed, and 14 ratified. So there's also a lot of structure that goes into the briefs. There are things that attorneys can do, can't do. It's very different than trial work. And in fact, I don't know a lot of us. I'm getting the evil eye from someone. Not really. I just know that I need to keep working along here and get some commercials or spots from our sponsors, and then come back and figure out what else is important. But I also wanted to let you know how well prepared the judges are. And there's a whole process that they go through for every single appeal. So why don't I come back in just a minute after I play some of these commercials, if I can find my list.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, so I'm back. I'm Pat Smiths. We're talking about the Appellate Division today. And one of the things that clients really need to know is to be very careful about filing appeals. First of all, it's a very expensive process. It takes a lot of time. And as I said, the rate of reversal in civil cases, that includes family, are 16% if it's a two-judge case and 20% if it's a three-judge civil case. And for criminal cases, it's only 7% if it's a two-judge case. And this is because of, I think, all the appeals that are filed, from people in prison, etc. And however, if it's a three-judge criminal case, the reversal rate is 24%. So that's actually more reversals, 24% for three-judge criminal cases versus 20% for three-judge civil cases. Now, of course, there are also some cases are modified, and very often, for example, 14% of the three-judge civil cases are modified. Now, the other question that we have to think of is whether or not we want oral argument. In a case, an appellate case, you have to ask for oral argument. You don't get it unless you ask. And does that make a difference? Well, cases that are argued, 67% are affirmed. If they're just submitted, 82% are affirmed. And reversal, if it's argued, 23% are reversed, and 10% of those submitted are reversed. And modified, if it's argued, 10% are modified, and 8% if they're submitted. So what we also need to note is that complex cases are more often argued, and, for example, prison disciplinary and appeals from denial of unemployment benefits are almost never argued. So it does depend on the case. And so what happens is we have scheduling orders. In other words, the appellant, that's the person who files the appeal, the appellant's brief is due at a certain time. And it's easy to get some extension, certainly with consent of the other attorney. Otherwise, you have to file a motion. So the first extension is usually not a problem. And most of us who file these cases, I mean, there should be no reason why you wouldn't grant an extension. If not, they'd have to file a motion, and the court would generally do that. I suppose there's some critical areas where they would not, maybe adoption cases or certain DCPMP cases. But in general, it's pretty common to get this thing extended. In fact, I've had appeals that have been pending for a couple years. I mean, it's a long process. But what happens when the judges get the cases? Well, the files and the calendars are received by the judges about 5 weeks in advance of the calendar date, meaning the calendar date, the date it's either submitted or oral argument. So there is a presiding judge of each of these eight parts, and the presiding judge decides the judge allocation for each case and also assigns law clerk memoranda. So why would it be a two-judge case? Why would it be a three-judge case? Well, that allocation is based on the complexity of the case and also the number of issues and the how if these issues are really unique. So that then what do the judges do? Well, they actually read everything, and they issue internal memos to each other. And as we call them, the pinks, but they're on pink. I don't know if they're still on pink paper. That's how it started out. But they exchange these memos as to, after they've looked at all of this, some of their initial thoughts. Not that they've made decisions, but their thoughts. And then prior to the calendar date, the judges also confer by telephone or by email. I guess now they probably use email. Maybe soon it will be Twitter. But in any event, usually a calendar, the court's calendar, there will be six cases that will be argued, and it's either morning or afternoon. There are some panels now that are sitting all day, so that way they don't have to sit as often, because they go to different places. It's not at all unusual. I've had cases in, assigned to the appellate division in Bergen County, in Monmouth County, in Morris County. I actually, a panel sat once at Newark Law School in Newark, and so I had an appearance there. Not sure where else, but it's not fun to have to go to Bergen County, believe me. I think that's maybe the farthest, but as I said, Monmouth County, depending on the time of oral argument. And they schedule and they stagger oral argument. So the as I said, they usually have six argued cases. One of my last oral arguments before the appellate division, there was a huge case in front of me. And I think that, as I recall, there were only three cases scheduled for that morning or afternoon. I don't recall if it was morning or afternoon. Because when you walked into, there's an appellate courtroom. And when you walked into that appellate courtroom in Monmouth County, I mean, it looked like there were 50 attorneys in there. But there were probably 20 attorneys on this one case that they heard. So then after that, after the oral argument, the judges again conference, and the presiding judge makes opinion writing assignments. In other words, even if the, the three-judge panel, for example, there will be one of the judges who writes the opinion, and sometimes they come out per curiam, meaning that none of the judges sign it, but that's how they do it. So after that, the judges prepare and circulate drafts of opinions, and these are now called greens. And the panel judges review and confer and either clear the opinion or initiate further discussions. And then there could be concurring opinions or dissenting opinions. Not many dissents in the appellate division, but there may more concurring opinions where a judge concurs with a decision but wants to set forth different reasons. So that's not at all unusual. Now, of course, there are also motions in the appellate division. I'm not going to go into that. But there is another issue that's of great interest often. There might be something that goes on during the middle of trial or at the trial court level before trial that there is a concern because the decision will be and has such a significant impact. And I think I said that usually, in most cases, an order or judgment is appealable as of right only when it disposes of all issues as to all parties. So just because you don't like a ruling that a judge makes during the pendency of a case, sometimes we call these pendente litis orders, But even if you don't like that decision, you know, it's going to be very difficult to take that up to another court and have the higher court make the decision. But there is a process where you can, and instead of filing a motion or filing an appeal, you have to file leave to appeal. Now, it's rarely granted, and I mean rarely granted. And they would say, well, it's rarely granted on calendar motions or discovery issues or from the exercises of judicial discretion. Well, I think it's just rarely granted. Now, the court would say that it's often granted on matters involving important issues of law where the ruling was clearly erroneous or prejudicial, or where practicality dictates resolution of an issue before all of the other issues are addressed. Well, I know that the courts would try to say, hey, this is, you know, it's easier than you think to get an interlocutory appeal. Frankly, the last interlocutory appeal I was involved in, it was the husband who was pro se, meaning he was representing himself, and he filed what I would consider a rather off-the-wall appeal. I can't remember even what the issue was now, but whatever it was, he wanted the appellate division to make a decision. As a matter of fact, the appellate division did grant him the right to appeal. So we were up before the appellate division when we finally got there. It was somewhat expedited, but not really. And, you know, we were basically, well, we prevailed. It was basically the guy was nuts. You don't want to say that to the appellate division. So that, but in the end, we won, but he was able to delay the case for probably 8 or 9 months. So, however, if in fact the court takes an interlocutory appeal, you know, then they will take it. Now, the purpose of the rule apparently is supposed to be to permit execution on a partial summary judgment. In other words, the person doesn't have to wait so long before they can, in fact, have an appellate case. Hopefully, they're thinking, hopefully it will be overturned. So what happens if you have a trial, end of trial, and you just can't make up your mind whether or not you should file an appeal? Well, guess what? You have 45 days from the judgment or order that you're appealing from to file an appeal. There might be one 30-day extension granted for good cause. It has to be really good cause. And also the absence of prejudice to the other side. Because, frankly, at the end of 45 days, at 46, 47 days, I can tell clients, look, you're on your way home. You don't need to worry about the appeal. You know, they haven't appealed, et cetera, et cetera. There are exceptions when the 30-day extension, I mean, I suppose if, you know, if somebody walked out of the courtroom, was hit by a car, and was in a coma, the court would certainly say, wait a minute, this is somebody that needs an exemption. So without that exception, however, it is 45 days. If there is a motion for reconsideration to the trial court or rehearing or a new trial, that tolls the remaining time. Well, what does this mean? That means that someone
filing the appeal will get additional time. All of the things that have to do with appeals, actually it's all on a judicial website. So what happens while this appeal is pending? Well, for one thing, in order to get appropriate, and I really mean appropriate, decisions, we have to be very careful about allowing someone to, you know, kind of stop the presses. And that's really what happens in most cases, although the order is still fileable, so that, you know, you wonder why some of these tactics are taken. But in any event, once an appeal is filed, then everything except enforcement of an order, certainly in family, you can enforce the order, but you cannot go in to court, to the trial court, to do more stuff on this case, unless it's to enforce, enforce the prior order. But that's what motions can be for, but what the person who is the respondent wants, unless they are also filing a cross appeal, which is possible, but otherwise they just want, you know, kind of to get on with it. I guess that's what we should say. So how long do you wait after? It depends. I mean, it can be months. It can be many months. So what happens, however, if the trial judge makes a decision that my client has to pay $200 a week in child support? Well, guess what? He has to pay just the way the judge orders it until sometime in the future. So let's just say, you can't threaten to file an appeal or file an appeal hoping that you'll get a better deal at the trial level. Now, your ex-spouse might go ahead and use that milk. I didn't mean that sentence. I said, without a stay, let's say it's the child support. Excuse me, I misstated what I meant to say. Let's say that there is a child support award, and your client doesn't want to pay it. He thinks it's excessive. He thinks all kinds of things, and he's taking an appeal. Well, guess what? He still has to pay it until the appeal is decided, because once there's an appeal filed, then the trial court has no more jurisdiction. In other words, the trial court has no right to do anything with that opinion except to enforce it. In other words, let's say someone is required to pay alimony and child support. They don't like to do it. There can be enforcement proceedings where the trial court, he'll go back and the trial court will say, tough, but you have to comply with the order. I'm not granting a stay. And other times, they might grant a stay because it's not going to be prejudicial. I think that's the thing that seems most apparent to me, that, you know, an application for a stay will not be granted if it will be prejudicial. And the application for the stay must be made to the trial court or an agency. There are also some possibility of emergent applications. That's not very, you know, certainly not regular. You have to call the clerk's office if you're making an emergent application. And there can be emergent applications even during the trial. And there are certain criteria there, certain things that have to be done. I'm not sure that there's going to be a lot of emergent applications because if they have to, the appellant is going to be getting most of the relief. I mean, if it's alimony and child support, she's going to be getting those payments right along, and so that there might be no incentive for her to agree to an adjournment. She wants to get in court and get money, generally, money for her client. Well, I think we're just about done, and I'm just about done on the about the appellate division. As I said, there is a judicial website. Just hope you're not ever dragged into the appellate division by someone else, and take a real hard look at whether or not the issues that were not decided by the trial judge can be worked out, and if so, then that's the way to do it. It's always better to try to settle. On the other hand, there are times where the client is in the driver's seat. There's no question about it. I will give my clients advice. I will try to let them know what I think a judge might do depending on the issues and how I think this particular judge might decide if he hasn't already told us. So the it's not the way to win, however, especially in family. And it's very disconcerting to see, especially how they're bringing children, or probably for me it would be grandchildren, in. So I will not be here next week. I look forward to seeing you in the future. I'm going to try to see if I can get somebody in next week. I'm going to be in Austin, Texas at the ABA, and we'll be learning a lot about not only international law, but the federal law. And a lot of our law is federal, a lot is state, and I'm hoping that what I'm going to do after the sports guys is work with some of the issues at the ABA. So in any event, thanks for tuning in, and we'll play the news.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Police in the Chicago suburb of Schaumburg, Illinois, are responding to the Woodfield Mall after a black SUV reportedly drove through the Sears store and drove into the mall and was striking kiosks. The driver of the SUV is in custody. It's unknown if anyone was injured during the incident. Witness Roger Thacker tells Fox News what he saw in front of his store.
People running and saying, run, run, run. And then the security came, and we followed the procedure. We put the gates down.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress needs to see the whistleblower report that the Trump administration is refusing to hand over. The California Democrat called on the National Director of Intelligence to forward the report. The report details a promise President Trump made to a foreign leader during a phone call. Now, the president has said nothing inappropriate was said on that phone call. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
You have a job to fill. You post your opening to dozens of online job sites and receive 600 resumes, which you barely have time to eyeball and settle on someone good on paper. In real life, they aren't. You train, retrain, correct, redo, admit defeat, start all over again. Robert Half is the better way to find top talent quickly. Robert Half interviews and custom matches applicants to your exact requirements. Satisfaction guaranteed. Robert Half, the experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Visit roberthalf.com.
To thank you for helping build MyPillow into the big company that it's become, Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO, has created the new Radio Listener Special. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the new